Saturday, July 8th, was our last full day at the ranch, and I'd saved the afternoon like a miser to do what I wanted with. But in the morning, I was up early, coffee and juice, and joined John Ben a little past 8. We spread out Conrad Worth's map of the Lyndon Johnson Park on the small dining room table, oriented ourselves, and when Mark Gosden arrived, the three of us set out for the selection for the visitor center that Conrad Worth had made. It is in the edge of the peach orchard, a little to the west and north of the Sweeney House, a very prestigious spot, I thought. We stopped a Secret Service car, and about the exact place it would be, and I climbed up on top of it and looked through binoculars that Lawrence Rockefeller had given me. No, with all the foliage of summer on, we still had privacy at our house, and a very pleasant view down to the river through the pecans and live oaks, and on to the west and north over the hills. It was my choice. Lyndon joined us, and we explained it to him. Mr. Gosden kept on saying that it was too close to the Sweeney House, which they hoped to make into a maintenance center, and wouldn't be as easy to administer, whatever that means, as the site they'd selected. I asked Mr. Taylor of the Secret Service. He agreed the spot would be all right. There would be a buffer zone for wildlife between the visitor center and Ranch Road 1. And so we went over to the other site, selected by the state park planners. It is slightly to the west of the windmill on the Hightower track, in a thicket of mesquite, not quite as high, and not the prestigious view that there is from the other. A little farther from the house, yes, our privacy would be better protected here. But I did not feel that the view, the general slope of the land, was as good. Mr. Gosden was politely adamant in preferring this, and I expect it will be here. In the end, John Ben agreed with him, and Lyndon said, just wherever we wanted to put it, so I am alone. We spent a good 2.5 hours walking and driving and discussing it from every angle, and then back at the house, John Ben and Mr. Gosden both left, and I had the rest of the day to myself. Meanwhile, Lyndon was driving around with Drew Pearson and a German editor, Mr. Henry Nannin, and two other Germans, so I was able to help by going out to the plane to meet the Time Life people, Mr. Otto Furbringer and James Shepley. It came as no surprise that Lyndon told us at the last minute that he'd ask Drew and his friends to stay for lunch. I was actually glad he did. So Mary sliced some baked ham to add to the shrimp curry, and we sat down to lunch a little past 1. And then fatigue overtook me. I read some in Thornton Wilder's The Eighth Day, and then I went to sleep a long, luxurious nap. It was nearly 6 when I woke up and dressed, just in time to go and bid the Time Life people goodbye. And then we all got in the chopper. Don Thomas and Jesse Kellum had driven out. And with Jim, Mary, Marie, and Ashton, and Jewel and Dale, we flew over, picked up Mary Ellen and A.W., and headed for the beach house. There followed the usual ritual of dividing the young and adventurous, Lyndon and all the girls, who chose the speedboat, and those who just like to soak up the serenity of the evening. Me and Mary Ellen and Jesse and later Don joined us, and we got on the big boat. Where the Llano flows into the Colorado to form the lake itself, I said, let's head on up the Colorado. I want to swim. A little ways up, I slipped over the side, and in the fading twilight, swam and swam and swam. It must have been 3/4 of a mile. Past 18 houses. It's very intimate here, the river. Narrow and quiet, usually. But today, full of speedboats and skiers. And on the banks, all the middle-aged people sitting on their lawns enjoying the evening. The temperature was mild and pleasant, and it was sheer heaven.